Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am going to have a big hour coming your way. We've got Yuval David joining us, an Emmy Award-winning actor, filmmaker, journalist, and leading Jewish activist. He is going to be talking about what's happening with U.S.-American relations, those riots that took place yesterday that I'm sure would take place in Chicago and probably when colleges come back to campuses, and what the negotiations have been like with the vice president, the prime minister, the president, and the former president over the last few days. I'm, of course, talking about Netanyahu. Then we'll talk to Josh Krasauer on the latest on 2024. And, of course, take your calls. It's going to be a real busy hour. And it's been an insane week in a good way. So glad you're here. Let's get started.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
It is time for this war to end, and end in a way where Israel is secure, all the hostages are released, the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza ends.
Yeah, there you go. That is Kamala Harris yesterday. She wants to end to the war. Isn't that interesting? When you have 28,000 Hamas fighters and 10,000 left, she'd like to end it to possibly win Michigan? Well, forget it. If you think that Kamala Harris, as a nominee and eventual president, if she wins, is going to be a better friend to Israel than Donald Trump or even Joe Biden, you are crazy.
Number two.
Are you getting a sense that some of America's enemies might be looking at what's happening here and think there's nobody in charge?
So let me just say this. There is very much someone in charge. The president is the president until the end of his term.
Barely. What's the real deal, Joe? Less than a week from his stunning decision to withdraw from the race, question Swirl on Biden's state of mind and what really forced him out of the race, since we all know it's his health. Is it not time we start blaming those who covered up his epic failure, and allowing him to govern might be as big a mistake as we could make?
Number one.
I've asked her, the VP, today, because she's the most qualified person to do it, to lead our efforts stemming the migration to our southern border.
Folks lying about her border record, calling her a border czar.
The Biden team didn't declare her the border czar.
Republicans named her the border czar.
What's the real, really? The border czar. Here we go again. The media tries to spin the VP's performance now that she's running for a first Donald Trump for president. The most laughable spin was that she was never the border czar. Of course she was. She was just bad at it, and they want to change the facts. So let's talk about that. So she was asked 1 month in to handle the border because it was falling apart, and they wanted to get rid of Title 42 because it was put in place during the pandemic to stop border crossings because we're in the middle of a pandemic, even though they were letting unvaccinated people into our country while telling people in the military, if you're not vaccinated, you're fired, you're out, you should just go out and quit. Now they got these talking points that are out. The talking points are actually been released, but not to the general public. We were not supposed to see them. And it is to say that the root causes is what Kamala Harris was focused on. Those are the triangle countries in Central America, and the border crossings are down there. Overall, they are up. She decided to make it the root causes. She was the one who did a Zoom call and one in-person visit. She's the one who went to the border just one time and never met with the Border Patrol head. Now they want to spin it that she was never in the Border Patrol was a right-wing talking point. That's a little bit of a problem. Here is a little bit of the spin. Congresswoman Nanette Barragan, a Democrat from California.
This is some more misinformation and disinformation. The vice president was never in charge of the border. She was never in charge of immigration policy. On the contrary, it's Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas is in charge of border policy. He's in charge under Homeland Security. And Republicans already tried to impeach him and failed. So what are they doing now? They're making it up and blaming her.
There's a little bit of a problem. We know for a fact she was a border czar. She was named the border czar, and she walked it back. Axios wrote it. They later had a retraction, like, 2 days ago, saying, in 2021, we shouldn't have written that. So now they're getting to intimidate or getting cooperation from regular media. I wouldn't say mainstream media, but regular media, to change the facts in which they knew them, in which the president rolled it out and said it. So here's the deal. She had wanted to get rid of ICE. She wanted to decriminalize border crossings. She never wanted to build the wall, obviously, and never wanted to do the assignment because she never showed up for it. She also never showed up for when it came to election integrity. Here are some of the radical stances that Kamala Harris has had as vice president. Cut seven.
Abolish ICE.
Yeah.
Is that a position that you agree with?
Listen, I think there's no question that we've got to critically reexamine ICE and its role and the way that it is being administered and the work it is doing. And we need to probably think about starting from scratch.
You support giving universal health care, Medicare for all, to people who are in this country illegally?
Let me just be very clear about this. I am opposed to any policy that would deny in our country any human being from access to public safety, public education, or public health, period.
How's that sound? So this is what I want. I want just these policies. Let her stand behind that. Let her talk about the new Green Deal. Let her talk about getting rid of combustion engines. We all had a real good look at the electric car. And many, some people like it, but many people say, where are the terminals? When I get to the terminals, they're not up. I don't really like the way it drives. It's not my choice. These dealerships, do I have them jammed down their throat? They're going to make other decisions. Unless, of course, you think I'm wrong and you think that the electric car market is so much more robust than the stats say it is. Because if you want to be ruled by the electric car, which means we got to get a rare earth from China or the Congo through slave labor, have at it. We still haven't found any way to get rid of the batteries, nor have we had thorough tests on the battery life, which basically costs almost as much as the car to replace. So we'll see where that goes. When you talk about immigration, though, and where she stood as the border czar, she was the border czar. They actually rolled out that she was the border czar. And now they say, instead of not blaming Kamala Harris, they're just saying it's a big fake story, just like the fake stories that we had of Joe Biden losing it in front of the camera. So yesterday, the Senate, the House, run by the Republicans for now, and it looks good that they could hold on to it, they put to a vote to condemn the handling of the border under Kamala Harris, the border czar. And they voted slightly to condemn Kamala Harris's handling of the border that has allowed 8 to 10 million people to come in since she took over. The biggest surprise is joining in the condemnation are seven Democrats, Mary Pilato, Henry Cuellar, Don Davis, Yadira Cavallo, Maria Perez, Jared Golden of Maine. They all condemned the handling of the border czar by Kamala Harris. This might be difficult to spin. I'm going to bring you to some headlines that existed in 2021. 3 years ago, Axios writes, 2021, Harris has been appointed by Joe Biden as border czar, and she would be looking for the root causes. Okay. Ed Lavandera, CNN, this will be the vice president's first visit to the U.S.-Mexican border. He writes, since he was appointed to the borders as border czar by President Biden. So did CNN have it wrong? MSNBC, Ron Flipkowski, I believe he's a commentator. Kamala Harris, who was appointed as the border czar, hasn't gone there at all. CNN, Toulouse Honoripa, he's putting the vice president, Kamala Harris, in charge of the border. MSNBC, Ashley Parker, she is the unofficial border czar. CNN, Maura Gillespie, there's been so much criticism against Kamala Harris since she's been named border czar. That's a lot of retractions, don't you think? A lot of people had it all wrong in 2021, and it was so urgent, they let it lie until 2024, until after she became the virtual or assumptive nominee. There you go. The talking points are out, too, and we should get used to them. Jay Johnson's a great guy. He's going to be my guest later. He was on yesterday, and it read for, like, the talking points that have been handed out. You know the little cards that Joe Biden walks around with? They're kind of long, long index cards. That's what this is written on. There are things on there that says, there's never been such a position as border czar. Border czar title invented by Republicans. This was not she was not asked to lead the administration's immigration or border enforcement policies. They're also admitting that they've been an epic fail. They just don't want to pin it to her. When we come back, I'll talk to Jared Krasauer about this. I just hope the American public is savvy to understand when they're being spun. I think they are.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
But it's a totally legitimate issue. She was put in charge of the border.
Nope.
She was put in charge of reaching out to the South and Central American countries to stem the immigration.
Now what she's up against is folks lying about her border record, calling her a border czar.
The Biden team didn't declare her the border czar.
Republicans named her the border czar.
That's the talking points. We got the sheet. It's a little card, and it says verbatim what they were saying back to Jonah Goldberg, who was on CNN on a panel, MSNBC, CNN, MSNBC again, and Jake Tapper. She was border czar. And what happened is she changed it to root causes because she didn't want to do it. Joining us now is Josh Krasauer. Josh, they're doing it again. Remember they told us the president was fine. He was 100% running circles around us, and then we see what happened at the debate. Now they're going to tell us she was never the border czar. That's the spin. Is it going to work?
Well, Brian, there should be a statute of limitations. It's been three plus years. No one said a word from the vice president's office for almost 4 years. And now that she's running for president, they realize it's a vulnerability politically. And they're trying to, you know, I'm sort of stunned that media organizations have actually changed their copy.
It's Axios did. You used to work at Axios, Josh. They went back and corrected their story from 2021.
Yeah, a whole lot of news organizations. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. I think that they've been facing pressure, and they roll over for the first request from this Kamala Harris campaign. You know, I'm a little concerned about what else. Working the refs as we speak. No, look, I think it shows number one how vulnerable and how concerned the Harris campaign is about how they're viewed on immigration. Number two, like, it's funny that the word czar, it's not an official term in our government. It's a colloquial word that refers to the fact that she was responsible for the border, that she had a big responsibility that Biden handed her in the first year of the administration. And like you said, Brian, she kind of diluted it down to try to distract from the fact that she didn't really get many results and didn't accomplish a whole lot in that role. So yeah, it is really, really strange, and it shows how concerned I think the politics are for Harris on the immigration issue.
So, Josh, from your sources, do you believe that Democratic insiders that helped push Biden out had any anticipation that Kamala Harris would consolidate support so quick and knock everybody else out?
Well, look, I think what they were worried about was how you get the process from handing over from Biden to Harris and whether people would be upset that Biden wasn't the nominee anymore. I think that went better than they could have expected. That most Democrats are excited, enthused about Kamala Harris, and even those that may have worries about her political strength are keeping their mouths shut because they want to unify the party after 3 or 4 weeks of a bitter civil war. Look, I think the fundamentals are kind of interesting in that she's getting the more progressive side of the party, younger voters, more liberal voters, African-American voters more engaged. And that's why you're seeing her numbers better than Joe Biden's were during the month of July. But at the same time, if you look at some of these polls, she's also losing support with seniors or not doing quite as well with seniors and not doing quite as well with moderate voters. So there's a little bit of a trade-off. I think, you know, Biden at his low point, you know, almost any Democrat could do better than Biden when everyone in his party was telling him to step aside. But she's not doing – I mean, I think she's about at the same level as where Joe Biden was before that disastrous debate in June. And the big question, Brian, is whether she's got the campaign skills and she can run a good operation to move those numbers in her direction. That's what campaigns are for, and we'll see how she performs the next
year. Right. So the big news yesterday is this. Cut 15.
Kamala.
Hello. Hi.
Hey there.
Aw, hi, you're both together. Oh, it's good to hear you both.
I can't have this phone call without saying to my girl Kamala, I am proud of you. This is going to be historic.
we called to say Michelle and I couldn't be prouder to endorse you. And
there you go. She did it walking. It looked like a casual phone call, like a reality show. So your thoughts about the rollout, the fact that he came in late, does he just want to isolate himself? I have an opinion on it, but I want to get Josh Crash Hour.
Yeah, look, I think there was a little bit of kind of misinterpretation of why Obama didn't jump in early. I think he was one of Kamala Harris's early champions politically, and I think he didn't want to create the perception that he was sort of putting his finger on the scale, that he was behind a lot of the machinations in pushing Biden out and anointing Kamala Harris. I don't think there's ever been much doubt that he's been a big booster of Harris's. Maybe he has some political concerns. Maybe he's worried about her prospects in the election. But I don't think there was any doubt that he was eventually going to endorse. And you could, this is sort of an awkward video. It does look like a kind of a weird reality show. But look, the fact that Michelle Obama is on that video is significant. She's one of the most popular figures within the larger Democratic Party. You know, it shows that the party is unified behind Harris. And look, I think Harris is going to run a very Obama-style campaign, trying to get new voters, younger voters, trying to create a certain a more hip vibe than Joe Biden was ever able to create during his campaign. And look, I think, again, part of the challenge for Harris is I don't think she has the political skills that Obama has, and she's also vulnerable in a way Obama wasn't, with moderate voters, with swing voters, with persuadable voters that might have thought Joe Biden was right. Was a little more to the middle, not quite as progressive. Harris has a whole roster of comments she made, especially during that 2020 presidential campaign, that paint her well to the left of the Democrat, you know, of your average voter in the country.
And you know what I think, Josh? I believe that Obama had everything to do with Biden being out. He was echoing a lot of people's thoughts, but he had the power to do it. And if he quickly endorsed Harris, it'll make it look obviously like it was his fingerprints on the knife that put it one into Joe Biden's back. It almost reminds me of Derek Jeter. You know where he feels, but he'll never weigh in because he's worried about his perception. They're worried about how he's perceived and his reputation. You think I'm right?
That's exactly what I was getting at. That he was with Harris all along. He has been working behind the scenes all along. He's much closer to Kamala Harris than he is Joe Biden. But he didn't want to make it seem like, yeah, his fingerprints were all over the move to push Biden aside and to get behind Kamala Harris.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens this weekend. But I think also we should get to the bottom at some point why Joe Biden left. They're trying to say he's fine. He just wants to pass the torch. But we know a few days ago he was just saying, I'm not going anywhere. Do you think they're going to be compelled at the White House to further tell this story?
It's amazing how the commentary goes from, you know, unable to do the job, unable to campaign, unable to really, you know, just everything is wrong with this guy. And then all of a sudden he's the greatest president ever. And they said give him a send-off. Yeah, look, the reality is that he was going to cost the Democrats the election. They basically shot at the captain. They took out the leader of their party. It was successful, and now they've anointed in pretty record speed Kamala Harris as his successor. Look, I think Joe Biden's going to be pretty much forgotten after they probably have a night where he speaks at the convention honoring his legacy, and then that'll be it.
We'll see how that goes. I've never seen anything like it. It's head turning.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's not clear to me that any of the protesters associate with the left wing of the Democratic Party when these are individuals who have been aggressively protesting members of the House Democratic Caucus. So that's a factual assumption that is inaccurate.
That's Akeem Jeffries trying to say that they're not anti-Israel. Those protesters absolutely are critical of Democrats, but they think that because the Democrats are letting them down, they know Republicans are firmly in Israel's camp. And we also know the squad, Democrats, all agree with them. We know that Kamala Harris's absence shows to a degree they absolutely agree with those protesters. They went out and defiled, wrote Hamas, flew their flag, burned the American flag, took it off these polls. So you can't tell me one Republican who says, yeah, I've had it with Israel. Not one. Not that I know of. Certainly not in office. But I could tell you a whole bunch of anti-Israel, anti-Benjamin Netanyahu, lawmakers, I think maybe 40, decided to boycott his appearance. And Speaker Pelosi called it the worst address ever. I call it the best address ever. Netanyahu knocked it out of the park, clearly talked about how this is not just about Israel. Hamas and Islamic extremism is about us. Yuval David joins us now. Emmy Award winning actor, filmmaker, journalist, and advocate for Israel. Yuval, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back on your show. It's always a pleasure to have these conversations with you. What I am inspired by you, Brian, is that you're empowering our American people to speak up. It's part of who we are as Americans. When we see things that are wrong, when we see things that need to be better, it is our duty to not just talk about them, but take action upon it. And I think we still have to wake up this sleepy, silent majority in this country.
So I want you to hear what the vice president said after 40 minutes with Benjamin Netanyahu. Did not want to, didn't look like she wanted to take that photo op with him either. Cut 39.
It is time for this war to end. And end in a way where Israel is secure, all the hostages are released, the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can exercise their right to freedom, dignity, and self-determination. There has been hopeful movement in the talks to secure an agreement on this deal. And as I just told Prime Minister Netanyahu, it is time to get this deal done. So to everyone who has been calling for a ceasefire, and to everyone who yearns for peace, I see you and I hear you.
What do you think she's trying to say, and what planet is she on?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, look, Israel has tried to have a ceasefire. Israel has tried to have peace numerous times, actually throughout the course of my entire life. Every single Israeli prime minister and Israeli government has tried to have peace with terror groups. How does one have a ceasefire when Hamas continues to hold hostages and continues to target Israeli civilians and continues to declare that they want to kill more Jews, not just with what they're doing in Israel, but with Hamas operatives and Hamas supporters across the world who are declaring that they want to have another October 7th. So let's just be completely level-headed here. How do you have a ceasefire with somebody who says they want to kill you?
You had 28,000 Hamas fighters, 10,000 are left. How could you possibly stop this war now? Because what they're trying to say is they want peace and a two-state solution. Do they know that the Hamas wants no part of a two-state solution? The Palestinian
Correct.
Authority has shown no impetus to do it. And you know who understands that? Hillary Clinton, of all people. They tried in the 90s, remember?
Yeah, Hillary Clinton has been speaking brilliantly about the complexity of these issues. We're seeing too many people, including, sadly, Kamala Harris and the squad and all these far-left people within the Democratic Party who are oversimplifying the complexity of what is happening. Israel has gone to the negotiation table time and time and time again, and the Palestinians have rejected it every single time. How can we have a ceasefire while our people are still being attacked? Are you supposed to just turn the other cheek and say, okay, fine, rebuild yourself and then hit me in the face again?
Here's more from Harris. Cut 40.
Let's get the deal done so we can get a ceasefire to end the war. Let's bring the hostages home, and let's provide much-needed relief to the Palestinian people. And ultimately, I remain committed to a path forward that can lead to a two-state solution. And I know right now it is hard to conceive of that prospect, but a two-state solution is the only path that ensures Israel remains a secure Jewish and democratic state, and one that ensures Palestinians can finally realize the freedom, security, and prosperity that they rightly deserve.
So in that 40 minutes, it's amazing. It's amazing in that 40 minutes what she was able to understand that needs to be done next, and she could really understand the two-state solution. I've never heard her speak about it. And this has never been further from a reality.
I mean, how can we have a two-state solution as if Israel can magically create a two-state solution? A two-state solution is up to the Palestinian people. Yet the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, and gosh, of course, Hamas, don't want a two-state solution and have declared that they want a one-state solution, which is what's from the river to the sea that chant is all about. The chant of from the river to the sea is about eradicating all Jews and infidels, which includes Christians, which includes non-religious Muslims, which includes anybody who's not like them, and they want to control that entire region from the river to the sea. So how can we have a two-state solution with a partner that doesn't want to be a partner?
So when you see these protesters, how does that resonate in Israel when you see them defiling statues and ripping and burning the American flag?
Well, I can tell you how it resonates in Israel, but I can also tell you how it resonates for me as a Washingtonian. I live in Washington, D.C. I go through Union Station regularly as I travel across the country and up and back to New York regularly for speaking engagements and advocacy meetings to see the amount of graffiti, which was not just against Jews, saying Jews must die and Hamas is here, but saying death to America, seeing people pull down the American flag as they defaced monuments and then burning the American flag along with the Israeli flag, effigies of Netanyahu, attacking police, that was beyond frightening for me as an American. We cannot let these protests and riots continue. This is not about freedom of speech. This is violent, and they're calling for violence. We need to really wake up and speak about what this is. It is a very frightening thing. It is horrifying for me as an American. As an Israeli, because I'm a dual citizen, it's equally frightening because America is supposed to be Israel's greatest partner. We are both, Israel and the United States, are bastions of democracy, what we represent for people. This, we have the same values of freedom of religion, equal access to education, health care, people being able to be who they are and how they are and have their opinions and have disagreements. But the people who are protesting and rioting believe that nobody can have any opinion other than theirs.
Absolutely true. I want you to hear Jack Keane listen to what the diplomats were saying, what the readouts from the White House, knows that the prime minister is going to go visit Donald Trump, where he would find a much more, I think, educated ear. Here's what he said about what he heard. Cut 47.
No, I haven't been for some time, and for the obvious reason, because they began to pull their support. They began to criticize how Israel conducts military operations, and I question their qualifications to do something like that. They certainly, policy disagreements, I understand. But the conduct of tactical and military operations, they should stay out of their business. And secondly, certainly they've been wiring, brushing Israel as well, for insinuating that they're responsible for the casualties that have taken place inside of Gaza, when we all know that it's Hamas who bears the brunt of the responsibility for these casualties. And Israel has taken incredible precautions to prevent those casualties as much as possible.
So, I mean, then that's what you hear, too, from the director of the Institute of Study of War at West Point. And he says that when it's all said and done, we're getting it wrong about Gaza because we're listening to Hamas's communication arm. They say when it comes to militant as opposed to militant ratio to civilian deaths, they are doing better, the IDF is, than we were doing in Ramadi and Fallujah and Iraq overall.
That is true, and that's something that militaries of most democratic countries have stated as well. When they see how just the IDF is, the Israeli Defense Forces, how careful they are trying to be to limit any civilian casualties. But we also need to recognize how many Hamas operatives there are, and those casualties are vastly amongst these Hamas operatives, people who are calling out for death to Israel, not even just calling it out, but they're fighting. So, yes, of course, Israel needs to fight as much as possible to not just rescue the hostages, because it's enough is enough where these hostages have been held for far too long, but we need to eradicate Hamas. We need to eradicate this terrorist group. And this terrorist group, as Netanyahu said in his very powerful speech, Israel is fighting on the front lines against terror, but that terror is one that's being seen not just across the world, it's being seen here in the United States as well. Doug, we need to together fight against it.
For the second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, is Jewish. Do you think that that could play a role in moderating her views?
I am not sure how much of a role that's playing in moderating her views, which is one of the concerns that many American Jews are having, especially those who've been voting Democrat and have been in liberal progressive movements such as I have, where all of a sudden we feel this confusion, this political homelessness, saying, oh my gosh, who am I supposed to vote for? Can I still vote Democrat? Doug Emhoff's daughter herself claims to refute her Jewishness and supports Gaza more than she supports Israel. Now, of course, that's Doug Emhoff's daughter. That's the stepdaughter of Kamala Harris. How much influence does that have over her? Now, Doug Emhoff is a very vocal in the fight against anti-Semitism, which makes me feel safer. But we even saw Kamala Harris less than a month after October 7th, who was calling for national strategy countering Islamophobia, even though anti-Jewish racism was reaching new heights. When you're seeing anti-Jewish racism, when you're seeing anti-Semitism, call it out for what it is. You don't need to start talking about issues pertaining to other minority groups.
I know, it's nuts. And if they brought up Islamophobia in one of these statements. There's been no complaints about Islamophobia. Don't try to put it in the same breath, because we're watching these horrendous uprisings. Then we find out these Columbia students that defiled and defaced and ignored and put up their encampments along with the Coonies, the City College kids. They all have all free. They said if you stay out of trouble for 6 months, your record will be expunged. So what lessons do they learn? They're big heroes now. They can do whatever they want and they got to get away with it. That's what it's like in New York. And that's what it's like with this administration.
That's what it's like on campuses across the United States and Canada, by the way. The amount of anti-Jewish racism being seen and being allowed on college campuses across this country is horrible. But let's take it an additional step further. We just had this LGBTQ Pride Month in June. And I'm an LGBTQ activist and have been, you know, for the majority of my life. I was assaulted during LGBTQ Pride. My group was. We were hearing chants of Jews get out, of death to Zionists during LGBTQ Pride. That means that within these liberal and progressive communities, which includes our college campuses, which include all of these marches and demonstrations, we're seeing people who think that it is completely acceptable to condemn Jewish people. That is anti-America. America is supposed to welcome all of us. That's why we say somebody's Jewish American, Indian American,
yeah,
Native American, African American, you know, whatever it is. We need to be who we are as part of this fabric.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Yuval David, thanks. Hope to see you soon.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The war on Kilmeade. Liberal scumbag smear, the anchor I hold dear. The butt of my jokes becomes the left's latest hoax. Yesterday, high-profile Democrats from ex-Senator Claire McCaskill to the DNC chair pounced on Brian Kilmeade because they claim they misheard him say the word college, claiming he said a racial slur. He's a twerp, a tool, a thorn in my side. I don't like his face or his body spray. He's possibly an apostate of hell. Who put that in there? But he's not a racist. The left has put me in the unenviable position of defending Brian Kilmeade when I should be out gathering dog poop to put in his office.
That's Greg doing what he does best, I guess, insulting me in a weird way. So that was him last night. All about that stuff that came up earlier where we were talking about college sorority, and this guy in Politico thought it would be a good idea to say it was a different word. And then the thing went wild while I'm doing this show on, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. And since our media relations people did a great job squelching it out. And then Greg evidently said to me, do you mind if I do this? The only problem is he emailed me. I have so many emails. I never got it. So he said, by my silence, he thought I green-lighted it, which is fine. Here's Jamie Lissau, the world's one of our favorite comedians here.
I have like a love-hate relationship with Kilmeade. Like, I love when a show ends. I hate when it comes on. And
so that really hurts my feelings. But Tyra said something nice.
I said college and the dignified is. And let me tell you, anyone who didn't take the time to know about Mr. Kilmeade, first of all, the work he did with Jim Brown with the UFC, they helped build it. Okay, he's had more books. He's done more for Black history than any of the people calling him names about it. I wrote in one of his books. This is a dude who loves his job, but the thing he loves most about his job is being fair and being right. Kilmeade's the type of guy who will give you the shirt off his back and his pants. So when you hear, that's who he is. That's who he is. I cannot tell you. Of all the jobs he has, I'm telling you right now, this dude will walk to the other side of the office, just say hello to me and say, hey, you want to do a radio show? Do you need to plug a book? Do you need to do anything? This is who Kilmeade is. So it's laughable. He's the one guy you can look at his track record. And when it comes to race, you could not say one bad thing about him. And from the bottom of my heart, for saying that about him.
Yeah. Wow, that was nice. That really put Greg Gutfeld in his place. Tyrus is the best. That was very nice of him to say, because I told him about my research with the president of Freedom Fighter, Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, and the Battle for America's Soul. I taught about Teddy and Booker T, the book that's out now. It'll be a paperback in the spring. And when you talk about what happened to leading up to the Civil War, the abolitionists had pushed our country forward, I find this endlessly interesting. So for this idiot to come out and write that and not really apologize, the more I think about it, he basically said, I'm sorry I misunderstood your word, but didn't apologize for the havoc that he created. But most people, even people that you would think that would not watch Fox, have seemed to all rally to my side, which I think is pretty cool. Special thanks to Tyrus for saying that. Keep it here.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, around the country, around the world, you listen to the show that everybody's talking about. We're thankful for that. We're thankful for you. Chris LaCivita is going to join us this hour, first time. Not many people get a chance to interview him. I had a chance to meet him at the RNC last week. Said, I'll come on. We tried him. He said yes. So it's going to be cool. He's the co-campaign manager as a GOP political strategist. And if you talk to people like Karl Rove, he's as good as he gets. It's just a perfect match for President Trump, in my view. Nice guy, but a tough guy. And standing by Peter Savanek. He's a senior editor at the Free Press, which is just a fantastic news outlet that was put together by Barry Weiss and is just soaring. We'll talk to him in a matter of moments. But we also are following different events here in New York City where we just found out, you know, those crazies that took over Columbia's campus and create havoc on City College and defiled a lot of those places, set up these encampments, took over buildings and ignored the cops. It turns out that they're not going to be prosecuted. All they have to do is stay clean for 6 months. Incredible. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
It is time for this war to end. And end in a way where Israel is secure, all the hostages are released, the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza ends.
That is Kamala Harris asking for the war to end with Israel after a 40-minute meeting with the prime minister. When Bibi realized quickly that if she is going to become president, she's going to be a lot harder on Israel than even Joe Biden was.
Number two.
Are you getting a sense that some of America's enemies might be looking at what's happening here and think there's nobody in charge?
So let me just say this. There is very much someone in charge. The president is the president until the end of his term.
And we're talking about the buzzing of the Chinese and Russian planes and the airspace in Alaska that happened earlier this week. What's the real deal, Joe? Less than a week from his stunning decision to withdraw, more questions swirl on Biden's state of mind and what really forced him out. And how many people tried to hide how debilitating and how much of a decline his health really was on.
Number one.
I've asked her, the VP,
today because she's the most qualified person to do it, to lead our efforts stemming the migration to our southern border.
Folks lying about her border record, calling her a border czar.
The Biden team didn't declare her the border czar.
Republicans named her the border czar.
Not true. They're trying to rewrite history. And in Axios's case, they're actually trying to rewrite an article from 2021 when they don't name her the border czar. Talking points are now out. The Democrats, knowing that Kamala Harris will be their standard bearer, have to rewrite history and make her not in charge of the biggest border collapse in our nation's history. It is not going to work. And let's bring in now Peter Savotnik of the Free Press. Welcome, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This whole border czar thing is bizarre. They want us to believe she wasn't named border czar. Even though she wanted to handle the root causes, she was asked to handle the border. That's on record already.
Right. That's all on the record. This is March 2021 when the president tasked Harris with you know, helming the kind of, you know, border surge, the surge of migrants at the border. It's all very public. It was reported on widely by every outlet. Now we're quibbling over the terminology, which is weird because the term borders are, as the piece notes that I wrote, you know, is actually an informal term. No one's actually a czar of anything in the United States government. It's just it's a reference to somebody who's in charge of something, and she was in charge of it.
So you point out, too, and it's with tongue in cheek, just to make sure readers understand that Axios in 2021 in no way intended to provide Republicans in 2024 with a talking point that might help Donald Trump. Axios has added editor's note on the bottom of this new piece that says this article has been updated and clarified to note that the Axios was among the news outlets that incorrectly labeled Harris a border czar. Well, that's interesting. Rewriting history and admitting to it.
What's most bizarre about that actually is that Axios is claiming that it made a mistake when it didn't make a mistake. So in other words, it's tarnishing itself, its credibility, because it's more important apparently to Axios that it appear as if it's on the right side of history, so to speak. It's with the right people. That seems to take precedence to reporting accurately. And so, in other words, it's willing to trade on its, you know, trade in its credibility for the right political brand.
So what is it like at the Free Press? You see this bizarre situation where they're trying to rally behind a candidate and remake her image, beginning with her biggest failure, and that's the border. It's not so much she had policies that didn't work. She just had no interest in doing it. A couple of Zoom calls with the Triangle countries, an in-person visit, and one cursory stop at a very sanitized El Paso outpost.
Right.
She didn't
want
to do the job that Barack Obama asked Vice President Joe Biden to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, I don't know what Harris was thinking about the job or what her commitment to it was or was not. I just think that, you know, what all this conversation about whether she was or was not the border czar, which is kind of silly, obscures, is that the border has been a mess. And what we should really be talking about is what is the border looking like right now? And we all know that if everyone agreed that the border were not a mess, if everyone, you know, thought that right now everything was going great on the U.S. southern border, she would be talking all about how she was the greatest border czar of all time. So we should dispense with the niceties or this kind of silliness about sort of whether she was this thing that no one actually technically is, border czar, and really be asking questions like, why did things get to the point they did get to with the border, where you had a quarter of a million, you know, illegal migrants entering the country in December, and you have all this violence, and you have the drug cartels and fentanyl and et cetera, et cetera. We can argue about the details about whether she was, you know, focused on root causes or whether her title was border czar. All that kind of seems to me incidental, especially given the original reporting. More importantly is how things got so bad in the first place.
It would have been a chance, you know, all these assignments, difficult or not, give you an opportunity to define yourself. I mean, if you go back in time, Herbert Hoover defined himself by getting aid after World War I to people in desperate need. He was so organized, so effective, such a great leader. He ends up president of the United States just on pure earning it. You have a chance to define yourselves in these positions and rise from the ranks. She has seemed not to take that opportunity, but now she does have that opportunity to go forward, and we'll see where it goes from here. Peter, in your prediction, do you think they're going to try to also remake her beliefs, her standing on getting rid of personal insurance, health insurance? Is she going to get rid of her statement, no longer say, I'm against fracking? Is she no longer going to say, I'm against offshore drilling, that I want to abolish ICE? I mean, these are stuff she's on the record of saying.
Yeah, and I think what's troubling about the story about the border czar thing, which is, I think, in the end, kind of, as I said, fatuous, it doesn't really matter that much. We all know that she was responsible for it. Much more troubling about the story is that it indicates how the campaign and its media subordinates are thinking about sort of, you know, Kamala Harris's record and how they might present it or approach it and think about it. So, you know, we're seeing this kind of airbrushing, this sprucing up, this editing of history, and that's troubling. That indicates that we're not really going to be able to have an honest conversation about, you know, her record or what she believes, because we don't really necessarily know, which we won't know. We won't be able to have a conversation. At least the public won't be able to, because even though there are screenshots of what was once said or tweeted, there are records, there are people who were in conversations, video, et cetera. The there is going to be this effort to airbrush, to edit away, you know, things that now don't focus group well, don't poll well. So it may be that she said something, did something that was very smart, successful way back in 2021, 2022. But now, for whatever reason, we decided is not helpful. And I would expect those things to mysteriously be disappeared.
Right. But we're not going to let it. And you're not going to let it. And that's part of the record. Are we going to pretend that Donald Trump's weaknesses didn't exist? I don't think anyone's looking at that. No one's saying that, you know, anything you didn't like about Trump and or you do like about Trump, the impeachments, January 6th, no one's going to say that never happened. They're going to say, look at it in balance about what he accomplished. That's how he got the nomination. So it's just weird on the other side they plan on doing it. Do you remember, Peter, that 4 years ago when Joe Biden was running after these very left-wing primaries, he stood forward and goes, guys, you know me, I'm a moderate. They go, I'm not against fracking. I know we talked about it on the stage, but I'm not against this. And the new Green Deal, I'm going to do it within reason. And I'm not going to do all those things. And people look back and say, you know, he, for the most part, for a Democrat, he's been a moderate. Kamala Harris can't say that. She could say a lack of record, but she can't say I have a record of being moderate.
I mean, I think actually, you know, Harris has been very, very successful at not staking out too much ideological turf. So she's never really like been very clear about exactly what her core beliefs or principles are. I don't know myself. I know she's been called the most liberal senator in the U.S. Senate, you know, and then she was, of course, part of the Biden administration. She is part of the Biden administration, which is more moderate. So I don't really, you know, her position on crime, for example, when she was attorney general versus when she was DA, like there's been a lot of, you know, kind of evolution. I don't really know exactly sort of where she stands, what she thinks. And I think what we're seeing now with the, you know, editing of sort of the recent past is in keeping with that. It's sort of, you know, fixing things, so to speak, that again, don't conform to the political needs of right now. So you know, I don't know what she believes exactly. She's a California Democrat.
We're talking to Peter Savotnik, the senior editor of the Free Press. So, Peter, you say you don't know what she thinks, but until further notice, we have to go by what she said. I'm not even talking about some reporting third party. Yeah. So we have her on video talking to Norah O'Donnell. We have her doing town halls on CNN. We have her sitting down one-on-one with Lester Holt. So I'll go by that unless she wants to say, I know what I said and I've changed my mind, which everyone's entitled to.
Yep. No, you're right. I guess what I meant is that there have been, you know, changes, pivots a lot with her and on big issues, right? Big, meaty issues like, you know, starting with, say, crime. In California, or now with regard to the border and how much responsibility she had or didn't have, I think that that's you know, I think that's just been part of her style, her MO, and it's worked very well for her. But of course, it doesn't provide us with much of an indication of what kind of president she would be.
So in your other column, I thought it was interesting, says Kamala, she's worse than Joe. Is now, no doubt about it, the Republicans have to respond in a cohesive way. They have this unprecedented demand to change gears and stop focusing on Joe Biden and go for a different candidate with 104 days until the election. So that's right. A challenge for them. And so far, their headline is, what yours is, she's worse than Joe, right?
That was, I think that's a quote from one of the delegates I interviewed at the convention. Yeah,
but it's kind of the mindset of the Trump team.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that they look the obvious, negative of Kamala Harris as far as the Republicans are concerned is that she has all of her faculties, as far as we can tell. So she they're not running against an old foggy muddleheaded man anymore.
Wow, that's so interesting. What is that noise? That happens to me once in a while. That just means we just banged out, right? Yeah, he did by mistake. Peter Savotnik, we're going to have him on again. He's excellent. It's so worth it to pick up the Free Press, especially Barry Weiss's column. He used to be editor famously in the New York Times and couldn't believe what was happening there. And she's not a conservative, but she's fair. And she put together a bunch of reporters. And they've really done a great job with this Free Press. We'll have more of them on. So listen, when we come back, I'll be able to get in some calls. Or if you'd rather write me, I'll get to them. BrianKilmeade.com. Bottom of the hour, Chris LaCivita. We can't wait. He's Trump's co-campaign manager. He doesn't do many interviews, so he's doing with us. So I think it's going to be fascinating at a time in which the entire campaign, although they knew something was going on, they have to pivot to the vice president over the current president. First time, really. Ever in American political history, it's not the first time a president has decided to step aside not to run for re-election, but is the first time it's happened with so few days until Election Day. So there's pressure on the Republicans, too. We'll discuss that when we come back on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Democrats on Capitol Hill are being handed this card with talking points about the vice president and the border. Do you know who's handing this out?
I have no idea. You probably should ask her campaign.
So the first one says Vice President Harris was never appointed border czar. There's never been such a position. It doesn't exist. Why are Democrats so sensitive about the vice president and the border?
Why are Republicans so sensitive about actually not owning up to them getting in the way of a border deal?
So, her answers are worthless, but the questions are great. And now she has to defend a lame duck president who's only a lame duck because he failed so epically in a debate. And behind the scenes, he's been failing spectacularly. And they lied to us the entire time. Now, I know when you're press secretary, you're in an unenviable position, but she said the exact opposite of the truth regularly. She said the exact opposite of the truth regularly, that he was running circles around us. We can't keep up with him, as opposed to goes to bed at 8 o'clock, gets up at 11. So these are the talking points. This is what Peter was talking about. They literally handed these out, these cards, one of which is Vice President Harris was never appointed border czar. Where have you heard that before? There has never been such a position. Where have you heard that before? Border czar, still a title invented by Republicans, really? Because it turns out the president said that, was not asked to lead to the administration's immigration or border enforcement policies. If you read this Detroit Free Press, you know what they found? They found a Time magazine story where she was taking over for somebody who was in charge of immigration, this woman Jacobson, who was the ambassador over to Mexico. The president tasked her to lead the administration's diplomatic root cause strategies to Central America. And they said that, well, look at how much immigration is down when Guatemala, El Salvador, and the third country, I don't even know if they have listed there, Honduras. Well, the immigration's down. It's still substantially high. It's down from their all-time highs. And a lot of this You talk about root causes. Well, if the root causes are overwhelmed by Tajiks and Chinese, it's time to change your strategies. Sorry, I'm only focusing on Honduras. Let the Chinese with their roller bags in, because it doesn't concern her. What does? I mean, can you imagine this mindset as president? So get a ton of people writing me. Here's an example. Mike Webb writes, Brian, pass the torch to Kamala, and now Kamala has to torch her past. That is a great line. I might steal it, but I'm going to give Mike Webb full credit for it. Chris LaCivita is next, the Donald Trump campaign manager. He doesn't do a lot of television. He's going to do, doesn't do a lot of radio, but he's doing our show for you next. So don't move.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Brian Kilmeade here. In a matter of moments, we're going to talk to the President Trump's co-campaign manager and GOP political strategist, Chris LaCivita. A lot going on in Mar-a-Lago today. We got Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel now going to visit President Trump at his request at Mar-a-Lago, and he was in Washington yesterday and the day before. So he gave, a fantastic address to a joint session of Congress. About 36 Democrats did not go. The demonstrators were tearing up Union Square and the monuments around it. There was really not much of a statement for at least 24 hours from the presumed Democratic nominee, Vice President Harris, condemning it. And then today, the Prime Minister is at Mar-a-Lago talking to his friend, President Donald Trump. And they've been on some rocky roads since the election of 2020. Let's see if they patch it up today and start moving forward. Let's bring in Chris LaCivita. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Brian, hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Man, since I saw you, so much has changed at the RNC, which by all accounts was unbelievably successful. Great to meet you in person. But yeah, everything changed within 48 hours. Was it, how unexpected was it for you guys at the time in which it happened?
Well, again, thanks for having me, and a big fan, and appreciate being given the opportunity to talk to you again, your listeners today. But yeah, I mean, the RNC convention was, by all accounts, just a great showcase of the differences and what Donald Trump is bringing to the table, what he's going to do for America. As it relates to what had happened or transpired over the last 48 hours after you and I first met, it's quite remarkable. It's not without precedent, with at least as it relates to Democrats. It was not unexpected. The campaign actually, back in May, we started gaming out scenarios in which, how would a Biden, how could Biden be deposed, literally, through the DNC's archaic sense of rules and what they do, with their convention votes. So we actually had been preparing that for quite some time. I mean, obviously, in the earlier stages, not so much it's going to happen. But just to prepare, in campaigns, you worry about everything and you plan for everything.
Right.
And so we really went through a planning process, and then it was just a matter of wait and see, and let's see what strategy that they implement. And then, of course, it took on a whole new meaning after Donald Trump just eviscerated Joe Biden at the debate. And there was some talk going in that, this was all a setup, and a lot of that is not without consideration. But, the fact is, Joe Biden basically demonstrated to America that he was, unfit and incapable. And of course, Donald Trump made every point he needed to make and just totally destroyed him. And they replaced him, deposed him, basically, because they knew it couldn't win.
So I know that as a Marine, too, you're training not only working in politics, but in the military. You got to always plan for the worst or a different case scenario.
Yes,
right. So there's another school of thought that is by taking that debate early, it exposed Joe Biden to the point where they could still replace him, where if you did the debate when traditionally in August or September, it would have been impossible to replace him. Do you regret taking the debate?
No, not at all. I mean, look, we worry about what we can control. The campaign is always focused on what it can control. And, you know, some of that you don't control. You know, we can focus on the kind of campaign that we put together, the kind of messaging and the TV commercials and all those kinds of things that you know, the amount of money we raise. You know, we follow President Trump's lead. President Trump made it clear very early on that he wanted to engage in a vigorous debate with them. And clearly their belief going into the debate was that he could do it, he being, you know, Joe Biden. And, you know, but you should also know that from a historical standpoint, in 2014, and I think it's important for your listeners to know this, when I said that this is not without precedent, in 2014, in the state of Kansas, there was a Senate race. And it was Pat Roberts, and the Democrats had nominated someone, and a guy got into the race who was an independent. His name was Greg Orman, and Greg was, you know, he had a lot of money, and the Democrats decided that they stood a better chance at defeating the incumbent Republican Pat Roberts than what they did with who they nominated. You know, a Democrat who'd received over 100,000 votes in the state of Kansas in the primaries. And so they sued to take their own guy off the ballot in Kansas. And the Democrat-leaning state Supreme Court agreed with them. And they literally disenfranchised over 100,000 votes statewide. And then they put this guy Greg Orman on. And at the beginning, it was a close race. And then Pat Roberts came back and ended up winning by over 11 points. So my point is the Democrats routinely do this. This is their war on democracy, the way they actually – if they don't like their duly nominated person, they could give a damn about the grassroots and who they vote for. The party bosses are the ones who dictate who's going to be on the ballot, and that's what they've done with Kamala Harris.
Since she got in –
this time they deposed the sitting president, Brian.
Right. And then with Tony Fabrizio, your pollster and your friend,
yes, sir,
came out for Donald Trump. He said, listen, they're in a sugar high right now, and no doubt the polls are going to tighten, and she might even surpass Donald Trump leading up and maybe past the convention. Are you prepared for that? Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, look, Tony is a brilliant pollster, has been. I've known him. He's a good friend of mine. He's obviously done work for the president from the beginning, going back even pre-2016. But I certainly 110% agree with the fact that there will be a slight bump for Kamala Harris. You're going to see it. I mean, look, anybody would do better compared to a corpse. I mean, that's right. Just, you know, but we're already starting to see that sugar high starting to dissipate. And look, like I said to you earlier, we worry about what we can control.
Right.
And we are a professional team of people who know what we're doing, very focused. The boss sets the tone. The boss sends, you know, he leads from the front. We follow him, and we're providing the operation that he needs to be successful. So we're not worried about, you know, whatever comes our way.
Very interesting. So I want you to hear what the vice president said yesterday, kind of challenging you guys. Let's listen.
And I'll tell you, I'm ready to debate Donald Trump. I have agreed to the previously agreed upon September 10th debate. He agreed to that previously. Now it appears he's backpedaling, but I'm ready. And I think the voters deserve to see the split screen that exists in this race on a debate stage. And so I'm ready. Let's go.
So are you guys ready? Do you want to keep that date?
Well, first and foremost, you know, I think Kamala Harris will regret using the words Americans deserve a split screen, because we're going to give them a split screen. We're going to give them a split screen between what a defund the police country looks like and a country that supports and funds police departments, a country with runaway inflation versus no inflation. I mean, so split screen all day long. You know, the debate that she's talking about was a debate that she agreed to, that actually was agreed to by President Joe Biden with, I believe it was ABC. And they don't have a nominee yet. They don't. They don't have a nominee yet. There's still an open window for someone to challenge her. She doesn't even have a VP. So once that gets settled, you know, then we'll take it from there. But right now, look, she doesn't set the tone. The vice president does not set the tone. Her campaign does not set the agenda. We're setting the agenda and we're implementing it. And, you know, that's the way we see it from this point on.
So I understand that the president's come out on True Social, I think, and said, I don't think we're doing an ABC debate. Why don't we have a Fox debate? Where do you stand on that, Chris LaCivita? Yeah. How dug in are you guys on that?
We're 100%. I mean, but again, when we get a nominee, and they have a vice president, then we move on.
So you're not ruling out that date. You're not ruling out that date, September 10th.
No.
Okay.
No. We're waiting to see who they nominate, because that's all still up in the air. I mean, look, people start finding out how Marxist she really is within the Democrat Party. There's a handful of them left that aren't Marxists. Maybe they'll want to see somebody else.
So a couple of things. First off, Michael Steele, used to run the RNC, now on MSNBC, said this.
I don't see a world in which Donald Trump mans up and debates Kamala Harris. The felon is not going to debate the prosecutor. That's just not going to happen. When the question comes around about his 34 felony convictions, what do you think she going to do? really? You want to walk into that buzzsaw in the conversation? So you can throw the border all day long, but you're mincemeat on everything else.
Your thoughts?
I generally don't give blowhards like Michael Steele the time of day. He's a joker. He's a grifter on MSNBC. So I let it be. It's not worth my effort.
But really one thing, not. Chris, I know what you're saying, but I will say the nominee, the presumptive nominee, did say the same thing, that this guy's a felon and this is what I do. That's what I do as a prosecutor. And I think the attempt is to get under Donald Trump's skin. I asked him that yesterday on Fox and Friends. Yeah. But what do you think, Chris? Like, what do you advise? What do you advise the former president?
Well, it's pretty clear. I mean, you want to talk about her campaign, her record as a prosecutor? Sure. We could do that all day long. Like, you know, all the times that she refused to prosecute, you know, some major criminals in San Francisco. Look, if you want to see how successful she is as a prosecutor, yes, most definitely look at her record. So, that's a debate that's easy to have. I mean, she's been coddling criminals since she took the oath of office. So, nothing new there.
But going at the president in those New York cases, those convictions, which I know you're petitioning. And now with this immunity out there, you're trying to get them to revisit it with Juan Merzan. We'll see what happens. You've had a series of victories on that. When she comes out and says convicted felon, how does the president respond to that effectively?
Well, the president will respond for the president. But this much I know is that it does nothing but demonstrate to the rest of America that, yes, in fact, the Harris Justice Department is full bore behind this effort to weaponize the judicial system against Donald Trump to prevent his election. Let's not forget, there was an effort nationally to keep him off the ballot in key battleground states. That failed when it went to the Supreme Court. You've got this Boxes case, which has just been thrown out. And, you know, what was amazing to me was the day after Joe Biden announced that he wasn't running, you know, the federal government just, we just found all these new records as it relates to, Biden's Boxes case. President Trump won his Boxes case legitimately by getting it thrown out of court. Joe Biden won his because he was deemed mentally incompetent.
Right.
We'll let the record speak for itself. But they're walking right into it. They want to fight over that? Sure.
So a couple of things happened with J.D. Vance gave a great speech, in my view, at the RNC.
Fantastic.
Very comfortable. Yeah. Sat down with Jesse. I thought it was very strong. They're starting to go through some of his interviews, one of which with Tucker Carlson. And he talked about Democrats being run by childless cat ladies. They don't have a strong stake in America's future because they don't have kids.
Right.
I might have paraphrased and missed a few words, but that's roughly what has been driving CNN and MSNBC for the last 24 hours. What's your response to that?
Well, I mean, look, there are a million and one different interpretations. The fact of the matter is it's been blatantly taken out of context. As a matter of fact, there was a discussion today where the Democrat follow-up attack is that J.D. Vance believes that only people with children should get certain tax breaks. Well, that's called the child care tax credit. So now we have the Democrat Party and the Kamala Harris campaign on record as opposing, you know, something that's been law for years, which is, you know, the child care tax credit. So, I mean, look, we expect this kind of thing. You know, they drag out the, you know, their has been actresses of Jennifer Aniston to come out and make these attacks. Look, we just sit down. We're about fighting for the working women of the United States, the forgotten people of the middle class. J.D. Vance is the perfect representation of that. They know it. It scares the hell out of them. And they're just, you know, they're going to peddle in fiction, and we're just going to have to deal with it as we go forward.
But, yeah, I mean, as a campaign, you're not against childless women.
No, that's absurd. It's absolutely absurd.
Right. Are you concerned that J.D. did so many interviews, especially leading up to winning a hard-fought Senate race, that there may be other things in there? Have you guys looked at all this?
We're very comfortable. J.D. was the best pick. The president loves him. We love him. He's a great part of this team. We're going to continue fighting alongside of him to make America great again. And again, he is a very important part of this campaign. He is a central part, and we're thrilled to have him.
We're talking to Chris LaCivita. He is co-running the campaign management with Donald Trump. Lastly, people writing up, what is the campaign strategy? You know that Kamala Harris didn't get the nomination because many people thought she was too left-wing. She was for decriminalizing border crossings. She wanted to ban fracking. She wanted to ban offshore drilling. She wanted to defund the police. She wanted to defund ICE. All those things were not resonating with the American public, but then she became vice president. Do you run against the one from 2020, or do you run against the 3.5 years as vice president with Joe Biden?
Well, it's a smorgasbord of liberal ideas that Kamala Harris has embraced and made part of her central identity since she first took the oath of office, decided to serve as a quote-unquote prosecutor who spent more time letting people out than in. So, you know, it's really obviously we don't tip our hand, Brian, too much on the strategy standpoint. But when you have someone who wants to limit consumption of red meat, who lied about the border, who is primarily responsible for the human dilemma that is the border, the illegal crossings, when you have someone who has advocated and secured people's release from prison who then went out to kill somebody else.
Gotcha.
I mean, there's so much to work off of, but it's a culmination.
And we had a great in-person interview. Hopefully it's just one of many. Thanks so much for the time.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Pennsylvania's Governor Josh Shapiro is being discussed as one of Harris's potential running mates. He also endorsed her tonight. In your view, what are the pros and cons for putting him on the ticket?
Well, he's certainly under consideration. I know that from key Harris allies. He's a first-term governor. He's Jewish. There could be some risks in putting him on the ticket. But certainly some of our voters here in Pennsylvania said, hey, we like Governor Shapiro. I'll give him a look.
So here we go. That's the downside. It's sad on the Democratic ticket to have a downside be that you're Jewish. Is that insane? But it is, because they want to win Michigan, and believe that. I can't believe I don't believe it, but it's the fact that in the Democratic Party, to be Jewish is a negative and might lock them out of Michigan, which they're about to lose anyway, mainly because I think manufacturing Donald Trump's resonating, and they're also alienating a lot of union workers because they're jamming through subsidies electric cars down their throats, which demand less workers. So this is some crazy times, but I do think they're going to put Senator Kelly. I don't think there's any doubt it's going to be Senator Kelly. They'll dodge a bullet if they don't. Hey, I want to see you in Stroudsburg Saturday night. BrianKilmeade.com. History, Liberty, and Laughs. Go get tickets.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have so much going on this week. I never remember a week like it. And my barometer is always Britt Hume. And Britt Hume says, I've never seen anything like it. I'm going to go with him. Jay Johnson is going to be on the bottom of the hour. The former Homeland Security Secretary did a great job for 4 years for President Obama. He came on Fox and Friends. He does come on. He came on Fox and Friends 2 days ago. And his explanation for the border czar, Kamala Harris, was exactly like the talking points that have emerged that Democrats have been handing out reportedly. And obviously, you can confirm it. So they know how to answer the question, why is the border so bad? Isn't Kamala Harris responsible? The answer is she's not, because she's not the border czar. And they, this is first, I got to welcome in Shannon Bream to this, because I got to get your take on this.
Do you have to?
Now,
contractually obligated to welcome me in.
I need
this
your
point.
Expertise on it.
Right.
In your rich history, do you ever remember something like Axios or ABC going back, changing a story from 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Because now they suddenly realize she was never the border czar. So when they referred to her as the border czar, they suddenly realized they were wrong. So they changed it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're up to date in 2024.
I have heard of this. And if you've read the book 1984, you've also heard of it. Like, it's so weird. Like, just own it. I mean, this is just semantics at this point, because whatever her title was or wasn't, we don't even have czars in this country. So nobody's a czar. But if her assignment was to get to the root causes of the migration problem, have that conversation. Is it solved or not?
Well, that's a good one. But it's also really missing. That's like playing it to where they want. Because they do have some numbers that show a decrease from the highs on Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, excuse me. Mm-hmm. They do have some that shows a decrease.
But maybe recently, not compared to the numbers that Trump had when he ended office.
But see, Shannon, I also think you're giving her a pass by dwelling on what she wants you to. She's done a bad job at that. If hustle means anything, she Zoom called a few times and had one visit and interviewed with Lester Holt, which was a train wreck. But she was given control of the border. And whether you say czar or that assignment, and I know it's a tough assignment, but it also could be a career-defining assignment.
Right. And that, I mean, vice presidents get stuck with really tough, intractable problems a lot of times. I mean, that is what they do. And so if you're saying that was her assignment, and we have numerous times in the last 3 years where there was a reference to this being on her watch, her assignment, from the president, from her. I mean, Peter Ducey pointed out yesterday this old interview he has with her when he's like, basically, you're in charge of the border. There was none of her saying like, no, I'm not in charge of the border. There was some level of assignment of authority given to her, and the situation drastically devolved.
So the talking points are out. Hey, can you pop them up again, Pete? Would you pop up those talking points again? Here it is. So here's what, Shannon Bream, you can expect over the weekend. I'm not sure who you have booked, but when it comes up, Vice President Harris was never the appointed border czar. There has never been such a policy. There's never been such a position. It doesn't exist. The border czar title is invented by Republicans, and the press repeats it. Was not asked to lead the administration's immigration or border enforcement policy. And it goes about nine different ways to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if it sounds a little like this, cut to.
But it's a totally legitimate issue. She was put in charge of the border.
Nope.
She was put in charge of reaching out to the South and Central American countries to stem the immigration.
Now what she's up against is folks lying about her border record, calling her a border czar.
The Biden team didn't declare her the border czar.
Republicans named her the border czar.
So the first one was Jonah Goldberg, who was exasperated. He goes, what? You're changing this in real time?
Yeah, especially as you said, there are edits that you can see where mainstream media organizations called her the border czar. It was not just Republicans. It was embraced by the media, saying this is her role. This is exciting. This is what she's going to do. And again, even if you want to get past the semantics, was she supposed to be getting to the root causes of migration? Did she get that done? And I think most people, if they're being honest, regardless of party affiliation, will say, no, that problem has not been solved.
So we'll see. I just talked to Chris Lacivita. Maybe it's going to. Are you? What else are you hosting today?
I will be on the 5.
Okay, you'll be on the 5. I was on yesterday. They're keeping us apart.
I saw that.
Right.
Are we not going to be together today?
I'm pretty sure we're not.
Ugh.
Unless, I think Jesse's out all week.
Okay, well, you may get the call. I don't know.
Next week, I'm doing the 5 Monday and Wednesday and Tuesday hosting Gutfeld.
Along with your 10 other jobs?
Right.
Well, when do you sleep?
Well, you don't sleep at 5 o'clock. I'm not
at
100
5 p.m.
Years old.
Might if you, but if you get up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, you might need a little nap.
2:30.
I love a nap myself.
Right. Absolutely. So if you do have a chance to talk about this, Chris Lacivita, if that helps any of your shows, was just on with us. And I asked him about what's going to happen, because Tony Fabrizio says, listen, she's on a sugar high right now.
Of course.
And she might even pull ahead in the polls, but things will settle down. He says there's signs it's already petering out. And that we did. I just asked, too, where are you going to go with your record? Are you going to go with the 2020 Kamala Harris ban fracking, ban offshore drilling, decriminalize, defund ICE, decriminalize border crossings, get rid of private health insurance? Or do you go for the next 3.5 years? Mm-hmm. And he basically says it's a target risk environment. I'm not going to give away my strategy, but indicated that they're looking at all of it. And they were starting really in the spring looking at the possibility of her getting the nomination.
Yeah. And I think everywhere you've seen them running ads on the Biden administration, it's now the Biden-Harris administration, because they're going to say, listen, she owns these policies, whether she had a personal assignment or not. She was part of this administration. And, you know, also this issue about, you know, Secretary Blinken saying that foreign policy is her forte. I don't know that we've seen her do a lot of stuff on the world stage. I mean, the meeting yesterday with Prime Minister Netanyahu was clearly aimed at giving her some gravitas in that place. But where has she been on foreign policy? And it's time to
Shannon,
look at it.
In my opinion, if you want to look presidential, show up for a joint session of Congress. Mm-hmm. Look like the vice president and let me know. I disagree with him, but I'm here. Mm-hmm. It's the right thing to do. I want to hear his speech, get his perspective. I want to hear what his best pitch is, if you want the answers. But instead, her answer was, I'm going to address a sorority and I'll come back and meet with him tomorrow for 40 minutes.
Okay, but don't you think they could argue that one-on-one meeting is very important? That's a critical thing.
She's
going to talk to him about the ceasefire and about the hostages and everything else. And that's going to be a more substantive thing than sitting in on the address.
I think you do both. I mean, I think you don't have an option. It's almost like saying to Gutfeld, you know, it's more important for you to do your show, mm-hmm. not the five. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about my analogy?
I like it. We're going to have to call Greg.
They're both important.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, too, think about this mobilization of these young women of these sororities and that sisterhood that lives on for ages. I mean, that is a different level of excitement that she's had, that those folks were not excited about President Biden.
But they're not going anywhere. You're afraid they're all going to graduate and there's going to be no replacements?
Well, no, you could have rescheduled maybe or moved it around. But I know that her team is going to say she did the substantive thing.
She just scheduled it.
Is to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Right. But you just scheduled it, unless you really did have this coup in place for months because you just got the nomination. By the way, I think there's two stories here. It can be one or the other. Number one, she did an unbelievable job consolidating Resport mm-hmm. rapidly.
Very quickly.
Or she's been planning it all along.
Well, because weeks even before President Biden had dropped out, there were questions about groups that were coming together to make sure infrastructure was ready for her and that if this change was made, she would be ready to go. And her supporters had said, listen, we're going to build together staffing and all these different things and talk about the money so that she'll be ready to go. I do think, though, that the sorority group is a powerful group of folks to mobilize who weren't as essentially engaged with President Biden.
No, I'm not against this. Sorority. It makes total sense.
But I think it makes sense for her to show up there.
Right. Would you know what you say?
What? Do both.
I'm going to come at 4. Because we had this joint address at 2.
So do you think her not going to the joint address was trying to signal to the further left flank of the
Absolutely.
Party, I'm not 100% with Netanyahu?
Yes.
Or is she going to be in the awkward position of having to decide when she claps, when she doesn't, when she stands, when she doesn't? Like, you know, that's a little bit of a barometer.
I think the first. I mean, I think they're really concerned about Michigan. They're mm-hmm. really concerned by being with our ally. We're alienating the Palestinian, Palestinian enclave in Detroit, when I think a lot of them probably want to be Americans and understand that we're pro-Israel or they wouldn't have come here. If you don't want to be with a country that looks at Israel as our key ally in the Middle East, please don't come here.
I mean, what we saw in D.C. just outside our bureau,
sickening.
There in Fox, I mean, was really, I think a lot of folks out there are like, let's start a GoFundMe. We will buy you one-way tickets. If you think this is a good idea. You know, it's one thing for our Griff Jenkins is in the middle of it and saying to people like, what's your message? And if they're saying, we don't want all this loss of life, the Palestinian people, we get that. I think people, war is horrible and ugly and people don't want women and children and innocent people killed. But if you're waving a Hamas flag, that's a different message.
Spray painting it.
Yeah. And defacing and, you know, those of us who live and work in D.C. would like to see that situation not happen again.
How could they overwhelm D.C. cops? Are they that undermanned?
I will say we got a statement from the National Park Police. That was their territory. And they said we only had 29 officers to control thousands of people who showed up, which then sparks all these other questions for me. Why wasn't Metropolitan Police Department of D.C.? Why weren't they involved? You know, on Capitol Hill, there are dozens of agencies. Supreme Court has its own police. Capitol Hill has its own police. Like, why weren't there more people mobilized?
Shannon, absolutely. So we didn't know that Union Square was going to be. No, you had a permit. They asked for a permit. Mm-hmm. And I see at 3 o'clock, they went online and revoked the permit and told them to leave. They went online.
Yeah, too late.
Hey, guys, bad news. I know you can't hear me through my mask, but mm-hmm. it turns out we got to stop defiling property. Mm-hmm. I did not know this. You would know this. You're a lawyer. Burning the flag. People say First Amendment. Yes. Well, whose flag? Mm-hmm. If it's the government's flag,
right.
that's a problem.
Or if it's even Union Station's flag.
Yes.
I mean, if it's private property and you are defacing what appears to be a government-sanctioned monument, but also private property, I think that you probably should have seen more arrests. But again, to the Park Police's credit, they're like, listen, we were overwhelmed. There were 29 of us. And whether other police agencies should have been involved is probably a good question.
Are we back to January 6th again? Where was the help? Where was the National
mm-hmm.
Guard?
Mm-hmm.
And both were flagged. Both knew they were going to be protests there. I want you to hear, in case Kamala Harris, no doubt about it, she's delivered 3 fine speeches.
Mm-hmm.
We know exactly the attack plan, and it's crisp, and it's ripe. Fine. Good luck with that. Go at it. She's already better at that than President Biden, but she always has been. Everyone on that stage in 2020 was better at presenting. Everyone was better at presenting than President Biden, but he had the most experience. They thought a moderate could be successful. They feared Bernie Sanders. Here's what some Wisconsin voters panel were put together by MSNBC, and it didn't go quite as they thought. Cut 19.
How do you perceive Vice President Harris compared to President Biden?
I think she's worse. She doesn't even know what's going on at the border.
Everybody's excited about her, and that scares me.
When do you think America will have a female president?
When there's a competent one.
Just, I don't get a good feel for her.
She hasn't done anything in the time that she's had. We don't know anything about her as far as her 3 years so far in the White House. She's not real smart.
No. Never considered voting for her.
I would do RFK Jr. way before her.
Yeah, absolutely.
If Vice President Kamala Harris wins the election, do you think that will be an honest result?
No.
No one respects her.
That didn't really go as well as MSNBC thought.
Well, I did see that they referenced one of the panels as a MAGA panel. So I think there were a couple of different panels here, but there were doubts from everybody that they talked to just about saying, also, if she's the one working closest with him, why now, if there was a deterioration, is she waiting until it benefits her to say something? So I think that's probably another line of attack she's going to have to answer.
Let's take a short time out. I want you to think about this question. When is her first sit down with a legitimate journalist to answer real questions?
You think she's coming on Fox and Friends? Have you guys invited her?
I think we do every day.
TBD.
Every time we invite Trump, which we do,
mm-hmm.
We invite her.
Yeah, and she's invited to Fox News Sunday as well.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I have to ask you about something that Donald Trump said at a rally tonight when he was attacking Vice President Harris. He said she is, quote, more liberal than Bernie Sanders. Is that how you would put it?
Probably not. I it is just possible for the 83rd thousandth time that Trump is lying. No, I don't think that is the case. I don't quite think that her record is where mine is in terms of being progressive.
Well, Donald Trump's not lying. That exactly is the rating of Senator Kamala Harris, and that she became vice president then. And she was asked that directly by Nora O'Donnell. And this, we've actually played it yesterday. It added a couple of days ago. Shannon Breen's my guest. Shannon, real quick, who's going to be on your show Sunday that you know of? I know everything's fluid.
Yeah, we got Pete Buttigieg with us,
awesome.
Who is a VP shortlister. How does he defend Vice President
Harris'
record?
Is he being vetted?
Record? That's what I'm going to ask him. See okay. how much he tells us. But, I mean, he's joining us. And we've got Senator Ron Johnson, too, on the various investigations that are going on.
Right. One with the assassination. And real quick on the assassination, yesterday it was revealed that local police offered a drone mm-hmm. to the Secret Service to fly over the podium and the area, surrounding area, and leave it during the event. They repeatedly said no.
Mm-hmm.
So the local police have pushed back. First, they were getting blamed.
They have.
Then the slope roof.
Mm-hmm.
Now they got pushed back, too, because Senator Josh Hawley also has a whistleblower that says,
right.
someone said they were on that roof, but it was too hot and
they didn't stay. Yeah. So I'll be really interested to see what other whistleblowers. We had Chairman Comer on last weekend, and he said they've had multiple whistleblowers come forward. So it seems like every day we get a new revelation about what did and didn't happen there.
Right. And we'll see where it goes, because Donald Trump told us yesterday that his Secret Service staff is extremely large now, mm-hmm. and they're following him everywhere. But you know what he's not getting? Top-level security briefings. And that's unheard of for the nominee from a major party.
Yeah, he's the official nominee, and he's a former president. So, you know, he's got a couple of grounds to argue that we're in this tenuous period where President Biden is a lame duck. He's done on the world stage, essentially, although he's, you know, he says he has a big agenda and things to get done. Well, we have serious hotspots around the world that are ongoing, and whomever is the next president is going to be need to be fully read in on where we are.
By the way, Donald Trump didn't lie. Remember this.
You're considered the most liberal United States senator.
Somebody said that, and it actually was Mike Pence on the debate stage.
Well, actually, the nonpartisan GovTrack has rated you as the most liberal senator. You supported the Green New Deal. You supported Medicare for all. You've supported legalizing marijuana. Joe Biden doesn't support those things.
So someone's not lying. But that's one of those things, too, that apparently has been modified as well, or there's been some clarification to that. But there was a point in which GovTrack did have her rated as the most liberal senator, and that's saying something.
She signed up for the new Green Deal. It's $10 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
We had to everyone had to change their windows, the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to
do
that?
Have you done it? Did you do it in advance in case?
I was doing it right before you walked in. I have someone at my
Get
house.
Get Pella on the line right now.
I'm not getting solar panels. I'm going to make my windows smaller. Therefore, they don't let out as much heat.
And you don't ever set your air below like 78, 80, do you? Even in the summertime?
You're a responsible citizen.
I
put it this way. I think that unlike any election cycle over the last 16 years, maybe, I don't think anyone's going to be talking about the new Green Deal. I don't think people.
Well, I don't think the left's going to want to talk about it.
Exactly.
But we'll see.
But they used to want to run on it.
Yeah, but now there's a little distancing, as we'd like to say.
Right.
But I mean, really, you now have records. You know what President Trump is going to do. You know what he stands for. You know what he did during his term, and he's going to say, you know, what a President Harris would do because she is, you know, voted a certain way. You have her voting record in the Senate, and you have her support of the Biden-Harris administration policies. Does she break off and become independent on some of those policies and say she's got a different way? We'll see.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Because he can't say, Joe Biden kept saying, I'm a moderate. You know me. Come on, guys. I'm a moderate. I'm not this extremist. She was the one that he was trying to separate himself from in terms of the policies. He ultimately asked her to be the running mate. And now she's virtually the nominee. Shannon Bream, we're going to watch you Sunday.
I'll see you Saturday.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I have to be the skunk at the garden party. This is too triumphalist, okay? This is everybody's giddy. I look at the coverage and it's great. Get ready, they're coming, all right? And it's good. Everybody should feel good and liberated and everything else. But if we don't win the election, we hadn't done anything.
James Carville, who was the first to come out and say basically Joe Biden's got to go. George Clooney put the nail in the coffin. Everyone else, people were wondering about him. Actually, if you think about it, Dean Phillips was the first. He was the first to say he's got to go. And then RFK was in and around the same time, since this guy can't do the job anymore. And now he's saying, guys, you got to calm down. I know you're happy to have somebody in their 50s who's very comfortable in front of the prompter, very good on stage, very good in public. But there's a lot more to go, and she's got this problem with her background. I just found out, I'm just learning now, there's two things that she's changing about her background. She's making news out, they're trying to make news outlets change their reporting in 2021 that says she was the border czar in charge of the border. And now, and some places like Axios is actually doing it. And now, in 2019, she was voted the most liberal senator in the Senate. That means to the left of Bernie Sanders, they're now scrubbing that from the site that does those ratings. I mean, think about this. They're actually trying to rewrite history in order to write the future. One thing about Donald Trump, you know exactly what goes on from the Access Hollywood tape to January 6th. bad moments, obviously, but you also know the good moments out there. He's not saying, let's go make sure that, let's go destroy the access highway. You can go do that again. They try to put it into court. It didn't work. So now you have a situation where the nominee's got so many problems, they're trying to do the impossible. Please don't fall for it. Even if you're a Democrat, you got to be offended by this. So you look at Bill Clinton, when he took office, there was all these rumors about all these affairs that he was having, all these relationships that he's having. Of course, they want to keep it down. But, you know, you went, by the time you voted for him, you said, I know about that. People went through rough times. Democrats are going to vote for him anyway. Then he had the incidents in office. He still got reelected. But were they trying to hide it? Sure, to a degree. But they weren't trying to rewrite the past. So it's ugly part of what's going on right now. I just don't think that we are at this point where we can get instant access to almost every website, every news organization. You could possibly go back and scrub the past. I mean, a lot of people are trying to do that to fix their resumes, and it's not working. I don't know if you could fix stories because people will pick it up. So one thing was kind of interesting. If Nikki Haley came out, and for some reason she did CNN, even though we requested her multiple times, and she said this, and I'll bring it to what she just said about it. She said this earlier, cut 18.
Most Americans do not want a rematch between Biden and Trump. No! The first party to retire its 80-year-old candidate is going to be the party that wins this election.
And she got a big round of applause. And her and Trump were really going at it. And she dropped out and said, I'll be voting for Donald Trump. And then she gave the endorsement, then she gave the speech. So she went on CNN and defended herself and that statement about Nikki Haley and about the choice of Kamala Harris. Cut 22.
They put in the weakest candidate they could put in. You look at the fact that Kamala, I mean, she had one job. That was to deal with illegal immigration and the border. She didn't do it. She was the most progressive senator that we had next to Bernie Sanders. You can see it playing out, whether it's the fact that she didn't show up at BB's speech yesterday, whether it's the fact that she pushed for all this government spending, whether it's the fact that when she was in California, the most liberal state, there was no tax she didn't propose. There was nothing that she didn't want to see. All of her, the things she's doing, from not wanting fracking to not wanting oil drilling, all of these things are incredibly liberal. And she is much more progressive than Joe Biden ever was.
And that's what explains, and that explains where she is right now. And that's why she said what she said. She goes, I'm going to go with Donald Trump. We ironed out our differences. It got very personal, but we got to get over it. To her credit, she got over it. It took a while, and the attacks were really personal and almost came from the left. But I also think that she wants a future, and she has. And if she doesn't necessarily be the perfect representative of the Make America Great crowd, true, but she doesn't want to be separate from, because I don't think anybody will be a nominee in the future who alienates that crowd. For example, Liz Cheney will never get it. Chris Christie, I can't see getting the nomination, as much as I like him, because he's taken on that crowd and taken on Trump, as opposed to just bowing out and keeping a low profile, let's say like Bob Gates. So what Kamala Harris does, she brings two things to the flavor. She brings some positives, but the negatives are her record and a lack of productivity and success as vice president. Ari Fleischer knows this. He weighed in last night, cut 25.
The media intercepted the memo and they said, oh, no, let us say that for you. I mean, I have a feeling if the White House put out a memo right now that said Kamala is the border czar, everybody in the media would go running around saying, wait a minute, she is the border czar. I mean, this is bizarre what's happening with all of this coverage. Look, she's got deep problems, which is why she was more unpopular than Joe Biden. And I think everybody sees that and knows that. And the media, if you thought they were in the tank previously, the tank just got bigger, deeper, and wider. And they love being in the tank for Kamala Harris now.
I don't know. I think they, to a degree, they got to be embarrassed. They just got caught covering for Joe Biden for 3.5 years. And then they tried to eviscerate him, and they were successful. Now they ended up, I don't think they picked Kamala Harris. I think she was the one and her team to consolidate all these delegates, got 500 in a matter of hours, called up all these others and say, you're in contention for my running mate that might have been competing against her, whether it's Governor Shapiro, Governor Pritzker, whether it's Pete Buttigieg, whether it's Kelly, whether it's Bashir, I don't know if I mentioned him again, but she contacted them right away and said, listen, you'll be on my short list, you'll be part of my cabinet, just let me have it. You know I'm here. You don't want to be the one to knock out a woman that could be actually be has a legitimate shot of being president. But as pointed out by Barack Obama himself, she's the underdog. And one of the main reasons she's the underdog is because of her track record. You have to actually disavow what she did when she was in control of the border. You have to disavow all those things we've been over. So Chris Bedford pointed that out. This is sooner or later when people understand who they have, they might actually want to swap out again. And that's why you just heard Chris LaCivita on our show. He says, listen, I'm not going to commit to any debate. We don't know who the nominee is. Cut 26.
The real reason we all know he's leaving is because he's behind in the polls and Democrats are completely obsessed with beating Donald Trump. But if you're to someone in America who just got home from work and you're looking for an explanation from this president, that's not what you got at all. There was no handling of why he's stepping aside, no explanation of the forces that pushed him. Today, during his 92nd public appearance with Netanyahu, when reporters called out and said, hey, are you resigning because of your health? He shook his head no. It's cryptic. There are no answers to be given. And all we're doing right now is just demonizing Republicans. And Democrats are could be facing some questions about this in Chicago.
I wonder if people are going to ask him any questions about how they shivved Joe Biden, because he had no explanation that night. And I think that her consolidation so rapidly, and all of a sudden she's on the campaign trail. She's got like 5 events planned. Who did that? One, she had 3,000 people show up. No Democrats had 3,000 people show up at anything since Barack Obama was president. And towards the end, his crowds were knocked off considerably. Another guy on the short list is Tim Walz. He's the governor of Minnesota. And what's interesting about him, he was the number one of the top surrogates, I think number one surrogate for Joe Biden. Going to bat for him every step. This guy has never been better. I've known him my entire life. This guy is on top of things, a real ally of ours. Now, we're going to see a different story. We're not going to see an explanation for where Joe is. We're going to find out if he thinks that he could be the number two. Cut 29.
It is humbling. It's a privilege. It's surreal. I think what I'm most excited about in this moment is it's clear we're going to win in November.
Really? Okay. That's what he was saying when Joe Biden was running. Now people are coming out and saying we had no shot to win in November, and that's the story. There's no way it's going to be Pritzker. I'd be stunned. It would be one of the dumbest moves ever. He's not popular in Illinois, not effective with the track record. What he is he's got money. But it looks like she's got plenty of money now, so I don't see the urgency there. Tim Walz, if you're really concerned about losing Minnesota, word is Trump's within 2 points there. He might even be up in a couple of polls. I don't know what changes with her in the race. But people are so dissatisfied. If you say defund the police in Minneapolis right now, you're not going to get any cheers. In fact, you're going to get a lot of anger because they bought into that. That's what she's been doing. That's what she's weighed into. Brian Fallon, who evidently is working for her, flat out tweeted defund the police. So the polls have tightened up. It's going to be a fantastic. It's going to be a really good race. This is the key for Trump, and you've heard it before. Just don't make it personal. Make it political. These areas in which he's strong, she is weak. What she's going to come after him for the 36 felonies that he was convicted of in New York, if you look at that case, it's got so many holes. People think it's a terrible precedent. Among them, Governor Andrew Cuomo, one of the big critics of Donald Trump. And if he wants to fight back that way, I'm all for it. But don't say idiot. Don't say dumb as rocks. Just don't want it. Because in society, the way it is right now, there is a way, different way you treat women than men. And that's just the way it's going to be interpreted. And no matter how you feel about the vice president, there are women that see themselves in her and are still undecided about voting for her. So don't go out and say, well, I got this caveman attitude, this caveman attitude when it comes to women, men's and women's roles in American society. Donald Trump's gone out of his way to stay up with the times in so many ways like this, but he looks at people as equal, genders as equal, and because of that, he'll go ahead and say, Brian Kilmeade's dumb. Okay, fine. It's not considered anti-man, but if you say that to women, dumb as rocks. A lot of women say, you know, I've heard that before growing up, and I don't like that. And I just think it's an unnecessary error. Why even put it out there? I mean, there's a school of thought to say, let's just treat everyone equally. I'm competing against her. I want to win. But you're going to compete against her. Some things, mistakes you made with Hillary Clinton that only worked against Hillary Clinton, that people don't look at her like that. Left-wing liberal from California, weak on crime, pro-Palestinian, all that, her views on energy, the exact antithesis of yours, Donald Trump. And what you're going to do now with the prime minister of Israel is show the support and the reason and the support he needs to win. That's what this administration's not doing. That's a way to disseminate yourself without saying anything negative about our intellect or anything else. Do you agree? 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, I'll take your calls. Also, you can write me, BrianKilmeade.com. I'm going to get through your emails, too, in the break. I'll find out which one are the best for the show. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
A different topic. Russia and China are teaming up in the skies near Alaska for the first time ever. Are you getting a sense yet, based on everything that's been going on, that some of America's enemies might be looking at what's happening here and think there's nobody in charge?
So let me just say this. There is very much someone in charge. The president is the president until the end of his term.
You know, can she ever answer a question? It's a brilliant question, and everybody should be concerned that China and Russia together breached our Alaskan airspace. And what the Secretary of Defense said, I understand that generals aren't necessarily professional broadcasters, but look up, make eye contact. You're used to broadcasting, inspiring people. Every general I know knows how to present. He eats all his words. He's unsure of himself. How did he ever get the selection of Secretary of Defense? He might have been a good general in the field, although this is the same general that told Barack Obama, don't worry about ISIS, they're the JV team. You can put a Laker, you could put a Laker jersey on a basketball player, doesn't mean they're NBA level. They're in the ready for the major leagues. Isn't that right? Same guy. You fail up in the Pentagon, reportedly, sometimes. So yesterday he's asked about this and says, look, we knew they were coming. We were never really under threat. We were able to quickly go and engage them in some way. That's not the point. And you know it's not the point. And doesn't he, I hope he knows that we know it's not the point. Why would they do this at this time? Why would, and according to Israel, of course, we've got to do our own investigation. I don't know if you heard the Olympics, the opening ceremonies in France. 800,000 people have been caught up, held up, laid up because of arson on three separate train lines that was supposed to flood into Paris. And also, the Euro train, I'm not sure what it's Eurozone train. I'm not sure what it is. I've only gone from England to Europe once, but that's out, too. So you're going to have an opening ceremony. Usually it's a coveted ticket. It's places filled to the rafters. This time it's going to be maybe a third filled. And that's exactly what they want. You know who got booed yesterday? The Israeli soccer team during the national anthem. You believe this? You know, you don't boo Iran, all the crap that they've done. But Israel, who's victims of a violent attack on October 7th, they get booed. The Olympics getting harder and harder to do. We just bid and got the Winter Olympics in Utah. Good luck with that. I mean, I want these athletes to have their moment, but I don't want Russia here. I don't want China here. I don't want Iranians here, although Iranians aren't known for their Winter Olympic team, pretty sure. So we're looking at a few major stories. We have not talked much about the assassination. And what I mentioned to Shannon earlier was the newest revelation. The newest revelation is that the drones that the Secret Service didn't have was not a problem. They were offered drones to fly over, now we know as the assassination site in Butler, Pennsylvania. And the Secret Service turned it down. Think about that. Why would they turn it down? These are the types of things that we need answered right away. Now, if that's not true, it's not true. I'm telling you, it's been reported by the police directly with a name on it. So that, excuse me, not with a name on it, but to a whistleblower contacted Senator Josh Hawley, and he brought it up. So they're going all, they're all over the assassination investigation. We're getting new revelations, but we're not getting regular updates. We're not getting regular updates about what's going on. But the update that I got this morning that Lloyd Austin was unable to do, General Jack Keane did on breaching our airspace, cut 40, 49.
And when you look at the China and Russia relationship enabled by North Korea and Iran, I mean, what you really see is a stunning aggressiveness on their part and assertiveness to exploit what they believe is weak leadership in the United States. They believe the country's in decline, and they're exploiting our vulnerabilities and taking advantage of it. It's opportunity that they see. And this kind of thing is symbolic, to be sure, but it's also demonstrating their conviction that we are partners here and we are challenging you. And that's the reality of what we're facing. The administration does not talk about this to the American people, Brian, and they really got to come clean with it.
They do. It would certainly help because you can get us motivated and understood why we're going to have to, I think, double the defense budget. Explain it. We're not just doing it to make bigger offices. We're doing it to get better, more sophisticated weapon systems. And the way we can make money, in my view, is sell it to our allies. A lot of this stuff our allies are willing to buy if we can get it out to them quicker, at which time, even with a friends and family discount, we'll make a profit. Why can't we arm our allies and make money on it? There's no reason. This is right up Trump's alley. Safety, security, arming our allies, nothing's better. See you in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.